In his book entitled God's Psychiatry, Charles Allen tells this story. As World War II was drawing to a close, the Allied armies gathered up many hungry orphans. They were placed in camps where they were well fed. Despite excellent care, they slept poorly. They seemed nervous and afraid. Finally, a psychologist came up with the solution. Each child was given a piece of bread to hold as he was put to bed. And this particular piece of bread was just to be held, not eaten. The piece of bread produced wonderful results. The children went to bed instinctively knowing that they would have food to eat the next day. That guarantee gave the children a restful and contented sleep. It seems that regardless of the socioeconomic group to which we belong or how sophisticated our palate becomes, every one of us recognizes the significance of bread. And today in our gospel lesson, John chapter 6, Jesus proclaims himself to be the bread of life. But what does that mean? Of all the different metaphors Jesus uses, this one seems odd. And here in the book of John, we find all the I am statements of Jesus. The title that he uses to reveal his nature to us. But as with the parables, we often have to really think about what it is Jesus is telling us here in these I am statements. Jesus claims, I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the door to the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I am the Son of God. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. And I am the vine. Now, some of these are straightforward, right? I am the Son of God. I am the good shepherd. But some are a bit more abstract and require a little more thought. I am the bread of life. I am the door of the sheep. I am the vine. What does it mean that Jesus is the bread of life? What does that tell us about his nature? Let's look at the text. John chapter 6 opens up with Jesus crossing over to the far side of the Sea of Galilee. John the evangelist tells us that a large crowd of people followed the Lord because they had seen his miraculous healings. Now Jesus, seeing the great crowd, asked his disciples where they might find enough bread to feed all of these hungry people. And Philip volunteered that 8 months' worth of wages would not be enough to buy enough bread for each person to have even a bite to eat, let alone a satisfying meal. But then Andrew chimes in, well, there is a boy here with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish, but how far will they go among so many? But even this little bit of faith on Andrew's part was enough. Jesus said, have the people sit down. And Jesus took the bread and the fish, and he gave thanks, and he distributed them among the crowd, and in excess of 5,000 people were fed. He adds that everyone ate their fill, yet there remained 12 baskets of leftovers that the disciples gathered. And that night, fearing that the misplaced zeal of the crowd would now compel them to come and make him king of Israel by force, Jesus walked on the water to reach the city of Capernaum on the other side of the lake. But undeterred, the crowds the next morning, they pile into boats and they cross the Sea of Galilee in search of Jesus. And when they find him, they begin interrogating him about how he crossed the lake without a boat and if he'll perform another miraculous sign to prove that he is the Messiah. What becomes sadly clear in the ensuing discussion is that the crowd following Jesus completely misses the point of the miraculous feeding of the 5,000, as well as its Old Testament's antecedents, the miraculous feeding of the children of Israel by God in the wilderness with the manna, the bread from heaven, during their 40 years of wandering. Unfortunately, the people, they just don't understand. Jesus said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, it was not Moses who gave you the bread from heaven, but my Father who gives you the bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. And the crowd is under the misapprehension that Moses and not God was ultimately responsible for the manna. And this crowd following Jesus now, they're following him not because they want to hear the words of eternal life, but because they think they found in him a free bread vending machine. Remember, the people were not rich, and food was not as cheap and plentiful as it is today. And it would be easy for us to think and to judge and to ridicule the crowd of people following Jesus for bread. But their illness is contagious, and we've contracted it. We might not be following Jesus for simple bread, but it's easy to start following for the wrong reasons. Perhaps we just like the community here. Our friends come to this church. Or coming to church makes us feel good about ourselves. Or perhaps being Christian, Lutheran even, is just what your parents did, so it feels right to come here. Maybe coming and getting forgiven each week makes it easier to live with your sin. Not to change it, mind you, but just to comfortably live with it. St. Augustine rightly observed that every person has a God-shaped void in their soul. And we can attempt to fill that vacuum with a host of other things, but finally, nothing satiates our thirst for forgiveness and our hunger for salvation except Jesus and his gospel. Try as we might, nothing else cuts it. Nothing else fits. It's like that saying, right? Money can buy you a house, but not a home. Money can buy you education, but not wisdom. Money can buy you a bed, but not restful sleep. Money can buy you influence, but not respect. It can buy you medicine, but not health, a spouse, but not love, quiet, but not tranquility. And despite the failure of money, power, pleasure, drink, drugs, and a host of other glittering distractions that promise peace and fulfillment, but always fail to deliver, we still scramble and claw to find meaning in everything except for our Maker and his destiny for our purpose. On a very minor scale, I can see how Jesus felt in this story. See, recently I put up a bird feeder in the front yard. And that way on Saturday mornings as I sit on the porch and write my sermons, I can see all the little birds coming up to eat, and it's nice. But the past couple weeks have been pretty busy around Trinity. I haven't had much downtime. So when the bird feeder went empty a few days back, it just sat empty. And yesterday, as I sat on the porch writing the sermon, even though I filled up the feeder right before I started, not a single bird came up to feed all day. It didn't matter that for weeks now, that feeder has been a source of daily food for them. After a few days of it being empty, the birds moved on. It's obvious. The birds weren't coming to visit me or to show off for me. It wasn't out of gratitude that the birds were coming and would fight over that little perch to see who would get to sit there and primp and prune just to keep me entertained. No. These birds were there for their daily bread. While the seeds were there, so were they. And Jesus knew that the people following him for bread were the same way. If their bellies became empty, they would leave. And missionaries in the third world countries often talk about rice Christians. These are people who will quickly convert to Christianity in exchange for food or some other type of physical benefit. The problem with rice Christians is that when the goodies are gone, so are they. And American Christians are not that different. Too many people use the church for business contacts or community status. Rice Christians can be found all over the world. These people, they look to God for what they can get. That's what we call consumer Christianity, right? And they're quick to turn their back on God and the church the first time that it fails to deliver for them. And people wrapped up in consumer Christianity, for these people, it's all about what they can get from God. They come to church to get fed, and if they're not getting fed the right food, then they find a church that will cater to their particular hunger. The problem is that they completely misunderstand what worship is about. Coming to worship is not about what we get from God. Coming to worship is about worship, thanksgiving, and praise. Yes, God gives us so much all the time, but that's not why we come to worship. And if we get this backwards, we tend to start to grumble. And in verse 41, we read that many began to grumble about Jesus because he said that he was the bread that came down from heaven. It's unfortunate, but it's familiar because the Israelites grumbled when God provided manna for them generations earlier. I guess human nature hasn't changed that much because many of us still grumble at God today. And in verse 42, they reveal the reason behind their complaints. They knew all about Jesus, but couldn't believe that he was more than he appeared to be. They were okay with Jesus as the meal ticket. They were okay with the bread that filled their bellies. But as soon as he started talking about being the bread of life from heaven, well, that's when they started to write him off. Perhaps it's important to know that bread back then, bread was the principal part of the meal. In our culture, when we go to a restaurant, we generally focus on the entree that we're going to get, right? And the bread on the table is usually just secondary. Unless, of course, you're at Olive Garden, which that's the only reason you go to Olive Garden, right? But in Jesus' day, meat was just a side dish. The bread represented the major part of the meal. So much so that the word bread was often used for any kind of food in general. They broke bread, which was simply a euphemism for eating. And when Jesus says that he is the bread of life, he's saying that he is the staple, the most important part of life. Everyone has access to bread. The poor people then used to make bread from barley, while the wealthier used wheat, but most everyone had the means to make or buy bread. If Jesus had been in China, he undoubtedly would have said, "I am the rice of life." By using this common staple, Jesus is saying that he is available, accessible to everyone, that he relates to everyone, that he is for everyone. And bread was a means of fellowship. In that culture, when you broke bread with someone, you were friends for life. Jesus likewise offers a friendship that will never end. Bread symbolizes God's presence. Bethlehem means house of bread. And this is where Jesus was born, becoming the bread of life sent from heaven to us. And in the same way that bread was a food staple that gave life to everyone at this time, Jesus is the bread of heaven that gives spiritual life to anyone who partakes of him. His words, his very body and blood given, shed, and consecrated in the Lord's Supper give us life, eternal life. If you follow Jesus for the quick fixes, the consumer type of worship, and the perks of being part of a church, then you're falling into the trap of those who follow Jesus for a simple meal. Our relationship with Christ is so much deeper than that, though. Don't cheat yourself out of a deep spiritual connection with God because you focus on the here and now. Look past the daily bread to the bread of life. God will provide both, but it's up to us to consume both. When God provides daily bread, it gets us through the day. When God provides the bread of life, it gets us to eternity. Praise be to God for his gift of eternal life, the salvation of the cross, the body and blood of Christ given to feed us not just food, not just bread, but salvation and life everlasting.